funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How healthy is your heart, and what will it take to keep it in a condition that allows you to live a long and active life? According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, heart disease is the number one cause of death in the United States, and strokes, which share many of the same risk factors, are number three. And although heart disease is often perceived as a greater problem for men, it has killed more American women than men each year since 1984. The good news is that scientists are learning more and more about what makes people vulnerable and what can be done to reduce the risk. So throughout the hour, we will be talking about ways to care for our hearts and identifying signs of trouble before they are serious enough to threaten your life. Starting right now, you can call 1-800-933-5372. It's pledge time, so I get the numbers mixed up. Or send email to think@kera.org, and our two expert guests in studio will answer your questions. Dr. Kara East is director of the Clinical Cardiovascular Research Center at Baylor University Medical Center. Dr. Jeffrey Schussler is an interventional cardiologist at the Baylor Hamilton Heart and Vascular Hospital. They're here in support of the Sister to Sister Women's Heart Health Fair. This is the fifth annual, which will take place this Saturday, April 25th from 9 to 4 in the Automobile Building at Fair Park in Dallas. We'll be talking a bit more about that as the hour goes on. Dr. East, Dr. Schussler, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The big headlines lately have been about the potential benefits of brown fat. Can you talk about what that is and why it appears to be better for us than the regular old, I guess, yellow or white fat?
Well, brown fat is something that they've discovered in people. When they look at lean people versus obese people, they seem to have more of this brown fat in people who are leaner, generally speaking. And so there's this thought that the brown fat is more metabolically active. And so people who have more deposits of brown fat tend to burn more calories doing nothing or doing activities. So they theorize that if they can figure out why some people are put together with more brown fat, they may be able to expand and use that to treat people who have less brown fat. Unfortunately, right now it just seems that if you've got it, great. Congratulations. If you don't have it, you know.
We don't know how to get it.
We don't know how to get it. There's nothing you can give that can give you more brown fat.
The one study that suggested that it may could be induced if you hang out in a cold room all the time, like 62 degrees, like really cold.
Right.
It's the only thing that might induce it that they've known so far. Nothing practical yet.
Right. Those people with the brown fat tend to burn off calories better.
Mm-hmm. We've also heard recently that vitamin supplements, that a lot of people became really excited about, vitamin C and vitamin E, don't seem to have the same benefits that we'd hope they might.
For hearts, absolutely. And we've had big trials now of the B vitamins, C and E, especially E. And we've not seen any benefit in blinded trials where we really apply the vitamins versus fake pills and nobody really gets to know. So you really get a sense of whether it's going to make a difference or not. And they're added on to, I will say, on top of the usual medicines for patients who've had heart attacks, and you just can't see any additional benefit of the vitamins. Fish oil is a little plus minus. There's a few trials that suggest it could be beneficial in preventing heart rhythm problems. Other trials suggest it's not. So it's the only one. I tell patients, you know, your aspirin is probably the most important vitamin you can take.
And aspirin, of course, is notable also because it's so very inexpensive as compared to a lot of drugs. What is the current recommendation? Is it a baby aspirin or a half baby aspirin every day for people?
Generally speaking, for men over the age of 45, we recommend being on a baby aspirin if you don't know that you have coronary disease. That's just a general recommendation. And the higher risk you are, the more likely it is to help. So if you have a strong family history, it's likely to be of help. And certainly if you have a diagnosis of coronary disease, it's recommended. Interestingly, for women, it doesn't seem to be as protective for coronary disease. It seems to be protective to reduce the number of strokes that a woman might have. But there's still some ongoing discussion as to why women don't seem to gain as much benefit from being on an aspirin to prevent problems.
And for women, it appears the benefit starts at age 65, so much later. So we don't routinely recommend women under the age of 65 unless we have known blockages somewhere in the body.
So let's talk about family history and men versus women. Are women more likely to have heart problems if their mothers have had problems, or are they equally at risk if their mother or father has had heart disease?
It doesn't seem to matter who your parent, which parent it is that has the problems. You know, a strong family history is very compelling. For women, obviously, if they have very early, very aggressive coronary disease in the family, that's a worrisome sign. Women tend to have their coronary disease problems a little bit later in life than men, usually by about a decade or two. So if you're a man and you have a very, very bad family history, it gets our attention. We start looking for problems at an earlier age. But that doesn't mean to say that if you're a woman who are younger than you would expect to have coronary disease, if everybody in your family's had early coronary disease, it certainly gets our attention earlier.
Well, and along those same lines, when women have heart disease, they do not do as well. So if you take a young woman who has a heart attack, she's twice as likely to die during that admission or that following year as a man who's had a proven heart attack. In fact, like last year, and under the age of 55, young people, we looked at there's many women died of heart attacks as died of breast cancer. So even though heart attacks certainly occur less often in women, boy, we sure hate to miss them.
Mm-hmm. Is that the reason that they don't do as well, because maybe women are misdiagnosed?
There's a couple of theories about that. Some may be that women, especially younger women, are not taken as seriously if they present with symptoms that in a man you'd very aggressively treat them and take them to the cath lab and open up their arteries sooner. They may not get the same initial testing. So that's part of it. Overall, women seem to do less well for various different reasons. Some it may be because of the way the arteries are situated, because they're smaller arteries or because they've presented at an older age with their first heart attack. But there's lots of different reasons. No one really seems to know exactly why they do worse overall.
But the smaller arteries may, I mean, that's the way it don't do as well. Bypass surgery,
right,
don't do as well with the angioplasty balloon type procedures, which really makes prevention in women that much more important, I think.
And is the family risk factor thought to be entirely genetic, or is there some nurture at play there as well?
I think that's an excellent question. I think it's a little bit of both. And obviously, if you look at a family, and if families, they learn their eating habits from the dinner table, and if you have a family that doesn't teach good eating habits early on, that tends to get perpetuated. And so people who don't eat very well when they're children tend not to eat well when they're adults. They tend to have more obesity, more diabetes, and that tends to run in the family. So it's sometimes hard to separate. Are you diabetic because you're genetically predisposed towards it, or because you've not eaten well or not learned good eating habits as a young person, or a little bit of both?
We hear so often about how different heart attacks in particular will manifest themselves in women than in men. What is the thinking about why the same condition feels so different depending on what your sex is?
Well, first of all, to say anybody can have a heart attack with atypical symptoms, and men do as well. It's just women more likely to be that way. And in general, you have to remember that the heart is not like your skin. It doesn't have near the sensory nerve endings that you do up in your skin where you can finally pinpoint anything that touches you. It has nerves that tell it it's hurting, but they're not as carefully placed throughout the heart muscle. And probably in women with smaller bodies, the nerves just get confused. So it is more common when you have atypical symptoms to, like, a shoulder hurts between the shoulder blades, upper belly hurts, not in the chest area. But both men and women can do that. Women are just probably two or three times more likely. And indeed, that may be part why they are slower to come to attention, why they get so many more hours into their heart attack before we're able to diagnose them.
And, you know, we've talked about this in the past, that there are so many of those symptoms that seem like things that happen on a regular basis to people. You know, you worked out too hard in the garden,
right,
or something, and
mm-hmm,
then you think, I don't want to go to the doctor. Are there ways to sort of rule out the things that don't necessarily require an emergency room trip, or what do you recommend?
Well, there are certain things that they're typical for non-cardiac pain. You know, certainly pain that you can reproduce by pushing on your chest or making a certain motion with your arm. We frequently get called for people who have left arm pain, because that's one of the pains that is commonly associated with heart attacks. And, you know, if I move their arm around and it reproduces their pain exactly, that's very unlikely to be a heart problem. It's usually more muscular, skeletal, or joint. But that being said, I mean, if you're worried about having a symptom that you think might be a heart attack, we would really recommend getting treated or evaluated either in an emergency room or by your doctor. There are a lot of things that can cause chest pain. GI tract can cause chest pain. Muscles can cause chest pain. But none of those things can really hurt you as much as a heart attack could. So if you're worried about it, and especially if you have a strong family history or a lot of risk factors for having coronary disease, the safest thing is always to get it checked out by a physician.
Do you – go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to follow through, mm-hmm, that and just say, too, in our lifetime, the emergency room, these have blood tests that are very sensitive for any heart damage. And really, I encourage people, that's what emergency rooms are for. They're not for your colds and flus. They really are for chest discomfort that you're not sure. And it's very easy if you get to an emergency room to get an EKG and a set of these blood enzymes, maybe repeat them 4 hours later, and then we're really sure you're not having a heart attack. And you kind of owe it to yourself. And exactly like Jeff said, if you have blood pressure, if you've had high cholesterol, if you're still using some kind of tobacco product, if you have diabetes, you're not exercising, and this is something you've never felt before, you need to be either someplace where you can get a blood test and EKG done.
Are you typically seen right away if you go into an emergency room and say you think you're having a heart attack?
Ideally, yeah. That's a problem for emergency rooms, but ideally, yes.
Usually chest pains are fast-tracked. They usually Those are very, very high risk, potentially high risk patients. And so if you identify yourself as a chest pain patient, then usually you're supposed to get your EKG within 5 minutes, blood work very, very shortly thereafter. And an EKG alone can usually find large heart attacks very quickly. So that's a good way of triaging patients. But you have to be careful, though. Sometimes people present and they say, well, I'm having some pain in my belly, my abdomen. Sometimes that doesn't get recognized as being chest pain or heart attack pain. And so it depends on how you present yourself as far as when you show up to the emergency room.
So when in doubt, it's important to use those words. I think I may be having a heart attack.
Right. There's this one patient in Dallas who always tells the women to say that. Just say, I think I'm having a heart attack, because then they will catch. And if you're not sure, we need to know that.
We are talking about women's heart health and heart health in general with Dr. Kara East, who is director of the Clinical Cardiovascular Research Center at Baylor University Medical Center, and Dr. Jeffrey Schussler, who is an interventional cardiologist at Baylor Hamilton Heart and Vascular Hospital. Both of them are here in support of the Sister to Sister Women's Heart Health Fair, which will take place this Saturday, April 25th, at the Automobile Building in Fair Park from 9 to 4. You can find details about that on our website. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 and join the station KERA by calling 1-800-456-5372. Hey Jeff.
Hey Chris. 1-800-456-KERA. That's the magic set of telephone numbers, 1-800-456-5372, or go online to kera.org. There is a big banner at the top of the front page. You just click on it, takes you right to the support page, and it's really easy. I think it was the last drive or maybe the drive before, because my membership's current, don't get me wrong, but I did renew, and I timed myself to see how long it would take, you know, just sort of taking my time. It's about 2 minutes to become a member of KERA online, and it's very easy. You don't even have to have a human interactive moment. But, of course, if you'd like a human interactive moment, call 800-456-5372.
We're here to serve you in a variety of ways.
That's right.
We want to think about the importance of public radio in your life, and I just ask you to sort of go through a little checklist with yourself and ask why you listen to this station and not another station, why you spend maybe 2 hours a day listening to Think, or why you listen to Morning Edition instead of other Morning Drive programming, or why you listen to anything you ever wanted to know. Chances are your answer is something along the lines of, well, there's nothing else like this in this market, and the information is important to me, and the way it's presented is appealing to me. Those are all great reasons to become a supporter of this station, which counts on members who listen for 56% of its annual funding.
Yeah, and I really feel like you're either one of two kinds of people. You're someone who will never support KERA.
It's hard to understand in a way.
And we know you listen because you're listening, and you know you're listening right now. And, you know, that's maybe there's a chance, but there's another group of people who I believe will eventually support the station. And every time I sit in front of the mic during a membership campaign, I think, how can I convince people in that group, the group of people who will at some point, either in the past, in the future, or currently, support KERA? And the tough chore is to get you to do it right now. Because the sooner we can get you involved with a membership, a renewal, an additional gift during this drive, the sooner we can wrap things up, get right back to the normal schedule. That's really what we're hoping to do right now. 800-456-5372, online at kera.org. We really want to hear from you, those of you who will eventually support KERA.
What I always like to say is you can let yourself relax about this. This is not like resisting a timeshare sales pitch. You know, you're not on the line for money you never meant to spend. You make a contribution that works within your budget, and you guarantee that you will hear your contribution at work every single day throughout the year that you're a member. Give us a call now, 1-800-456-5372, or go to kera.org. We have a wealth of thank you gifts, plus we have this drawing, Jeff.
Yeah, there is a drawing for a trip for two to London on British Airways business class, also a $1,000 Marriott gift card, so you can use it ostensibly toward your hotel stay, a trip to the BBC studios in London. What a great opportunity for some lucky winner. Maybe Amanda Hand in Fort Worth or Irvin Glaspie in Ennis, they have done their part. Please be the next one. Call 800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org.
And again, we know that you may be running around this afternoon, but it really just takes a couple of minutes to become a member. You can do that with your credit or debit card. You can set up a sustaining membership, whatever works for you. But we do appreciate your call right now to 1-800-456-5372. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. The Sister to Sister Women's Heart Health Fair, the fifth annual, takes place this Saturday, April 25th, in Fair Park in Dallas at the Automobile Building. It'll be going from 9 to 4. There are all kinds of screenings for women, and there is also counseling and different information that you can receive about keeping yourself healthy and finding out if there's an existing problem. Our guests today are going to talk about this as well. Dr. Jeffrey Schuessler is an interventional cardiologist at Baylor Hamilton Heart and Vascular Hospital. Dr. Kara East is director of the Clinical Cardiovascular Research Center at Baylor University Medical Center. If you've got a question and want to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. In terms of prevention, I wonder if people don't think they don't need prevention until they have had some sort of warning. In other words, should we all assume that we need to be practicing prevention for heart disease?
Absolutely. And I think that we all kind of know instinctively that tobacco plays a big risk. It's especially true for women on this Women's Heart Health Fair. Framingham Heart Study, you could probably not see much risk in men at 3 cigarettes a day, but at 1 cigarette a day for women, you can see it.
Wow.
So, and people know that they've been smoking, and unfortunately, because we haven't had these anti-smoking campaigns going on for a while, tobacco's on its rise up in our young people. So we're very concerned about that. Also, in the increase in obesity, I mean, there's no question, especially in our young people, their teens and 20s, it's a marked increase. Childhood diabetes continues to go up every year. All of these are risk factors, and they're known risk factors. High cholesterol, you can get it checked almost anywhere, especially in health screenings like this if you're out of insurance. And then Jeff is going to tell us a little bit about how you could detect to see if you're one of these people that are making plaques and really should intervene early.
Right. There's some new technology that's out there using high-speed CT scanners to actually look inside the heart years before an artery is actually clogged to give some people an early insight into whether or not they need to be on cholesterol-lowering drugs. There's a technology, it's called a calcium score, and for people who are at high risk, this is sometimes an excellent way. It's very inexpensive, it's very safe, a good way of looking inside the heart arteries and seeing whether there's someone that needs to be on cholesterol medicine long before they would normally be put on these types of medications. So this is something they can certainly talk to their doctors about, but there's some new data to suggest that if you can get there early and talk to your doctor about being on some of these preventative medications, you can prevent a problem that might happen years down the road.
How affordable are those medications? I know there's a new wave, and then there's sort of older drugs that seem to also work well for many people.
Well, remember, the older drugs were new drugs once upon a time. And, you know, years ago, Pravastatin was the best thing on the market. And now it's a generic medication that for most people is $4. So a lot of times for people who don't have...
That's like $4 a month.
$4 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So for, you know, the latest drugs may be incrementally better. But I always say if you really need to be on a medication and the barrier to care is the money, I'd much rather you be on a slightly less effective, much more inexpensive medication than on nothing. And so, and there's a lot of programs out there, all of the name brand medications, they almost invariably have some kind of program where the company's going to help you afford your medication. So money shouldn't be the biggest issue as far as receiving the medications that you need.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. How often should people who don't have any evidence that there's been a problem so far be screened for the risk factors of heart disease?
Man, I think yearly. And at the very least, 2 years. But women tend to get that because they're likely to get into an OB-GYN doctor. So they're going to get their blood pressure checked, their cholesterol checked. Someone's going to be paying attention. I think men are the ones that sometimes can go 10 years, 15 years without seeing a physician. And we just don't really like to lose them like that because those are simple. They're silent killers. Cholesterol is a silent killer. Triglycerides, blood pressure, diabetes. Unless you measure your blood, you won't know you have them. Until if you have really severe forms of it, then you know, we don't want to find out you have these by having a stroke or a heart attack. We really need to catch you early. And that CT scan that you're talking about, most of the hospitals have these CT scans, and they're like $200 now.
They're cheaper in most places. I think ours is down to $80.
I mean, it's like very easy. So if you know you're a person making plaque, yeah. If you're one of these people starting to make plaque, you're one of the people we really need to have you in and screen. And I think all people, once they turn 50, it's like a colonoscopy. If you haven't seen a doctor the last 10 years, you need to get in for a health screening, get a good baseline on your heart.
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that. There really aren't guidelines right now for using these new technologies for screening, but I firmly believe that in the future you probably will get your screening CT scan if you have high-risk family history, just like you do get your screening colonoscopy at age 40 if you have a family history of colon cancer.
So how does that work now if someone doesn't have a regular physician or doesn't have insurance but thinks, well, I could find $80 or even $200 to get the screening? Do you call a facility? Do you have to go through a GP, or how does that work?
Depends on the test. For calcium score, it's very easy. That's something actually individuals can order themselves. They don't even need to see a physician to get it ordered. But most of the other tests, so we're talking about stress testing or CT angiography or for a heart catheterization, those are things that really need to go through their physician. So whether they have a family physician or they go seek out a specialist. A lot of people come to see me, they think that they've got a heart problem, and they just search me out either on the internet or they call someone that, they have family friends that have seen us in the office, and they go directly to the heart specialist. That's sometimes a reasonable way of doing it, but if you have a family physician or a primary care physician, usually going through them is the easiest way of getting to a specialist.
Can the heart, after it's been damaged, repair itself at all?
Unfortunately, for the most part, the answer is no. I mean, if you've really truly had a heart attack where you've killed the muscle to the heart, that almost never repairs itself. And they're actually looking at new technologies these days using stem cells and using other types of medications to try and repair the damage. So again, it's very difficult once that heart muscle has been permanently damaged to recover the function. So our primary goal in cardiology is to, number one, prevent you from becoming a heart patient in the first place. It sounds kind of strange, but I'd actually prefer that people don't show up at my door having their first heart attack.
You could move into plastic surgery and make a fortune.
Well, I don't think there's any danger of us running out of patients anytime soon, but it always seems to me somewhat of a failure if we see someone who's having in the middle of their first large heart attack. And that being said, if you are having a heart attack, time is of the essence. We have kind of a golden hour to get to someone's heart from the time that their heart attack starts, where we really don't see a lot of heart damage. So when someone shows up in my emergency room and they're really having a large heart attack, if I can get that artery open very quickly, they never have any significant damage. If it takes them a little bit more time, we're even talking 2, 3, 4 hours, there sometimes is damage and sometimes it's permanent. Certainly people after about 12 hours, if they're having their infarction, there's very little hope that there's going to be much muscle recovery. So the earlier you get checked out, the better.
If you think you are having a heart attack or someone around you is having a heart attack, should you run for the bottle of aspirin before you do anything else?
No, you should call 911 before you do anything else,
right,
and then run for the bottle of aspirin. You really do need to have someone coming and taking you in quickly.
Right.
Again, that hour is just golden. Same thing for strokes. We're talking about 3 hours because we really like to stop strokes now with clot busters. We like to cool the brain down, which seems to cause less long-term damage.
Physically cool it.
Physically cool it. We like it, some of the big strokes, we definitely cool those down, just like you kind of heard about in the news. That can make a big difference. But prevention's the key, and then otherwise an identification. And these symptoms are atypical. If you're having something you're not sure, we need you in an emergency room somewhere.
How much exercise should we all be getting every day? And what kind of exercise counts? And what kind may be good for your waistline but not necessarily any good for heart disease?
Well, aerobic exercise is still the one that's going to burn up that brown fat, get that brown fat perhaps turned on and burn your calories up. And you need to get your heart rate about 130 to 140 for at least 20 minutes, at least 5 days a week. And actually for women, the current guidelines that came out spring of 07 said 7 days a week is your goal. And that way, if you don't get 7, at least you can get 5 in. But you do need that. Weightlifting is also very positive for the body in that if you have a decent muscle mass and you don't hurt your joints, you don't get the back pain, you just don't get the arthritis. But unless you're doing it in such a way that you're really getting out of breath when you weightlift, you're probably not getting as much effect for the heart.
One caveat to that, people say I'm in good shape, I'm fit. Just because you exercise, it actually doesn't mean that you are not going to have a heart problem.
Yeah.
And one of life's little ironies is that exercise is great for you. It helps keep your waistline down. It helps keep your blood pressure down. It prevents diabetes to some degree. But it doesn't really prevent heart disease. I mean, everybody remembers Jim Fix, who died of a heart attack during a race. And, so if you're experiencing these types of symptoms and yet you say, but I'm a healthy person, you shouldn't ignore them.
Mm-hmm. And it also doesn't mean you can be of normal weight and still have heart problems.
Oh, absolutely.
And Jim Fix, like we were talking about, he sort of like learned to become an exerciser at age 32. And before that, he was like smoking 2 packs a day and he was very overweight. Mm-hmm. And so he had probably built up plaque during that time and it didn't take that much for it to rupture, even though he got to his 40s. And he had outlived anybody in his family. But with the newer medications and really individual focus attention to what your risk factors are, he probably doesn't have to die.
And the exercise that we need every day can be broken up, right? It doesn't have to be 20 minutes all at once. You can do 10 and 10.
In fact, we still talk about, and they always encourage everybody, but they're still not doing it. You know, take the stairs, park in the back of the parking lot, throw that exercise in anywhere that you can, you know?
And it seems to be that there's the biggest leap between being sedentary, not doing any exercise, and doing some exercise. Now, going from doing some exercise to doing a lot of exercise is potentially incrementally better, but not as big of a leap as going from none to some.
Yeah, you got to avoid that all or none phenomenon. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to be none or I'm going to be an athlete,
right.
And neither one of those
helps.
Are logical.
Right.
Yeah, it does seem like that would probably, the all or nothing thing keeps people from bothering because they figure, look at me now and how am I ever going to get to where I need to
sure.
be?
Oh, sure. I mean, I encourage people 15 minutes, 3 times a week to start and then slowly move up, but even doing something helps.
And even with my very overweight patients, I've often told them, it's amazing, they drop 10 or 15 pounds. They need to lose 50, but they drop 10 or 15, and the blood pressure just kind of melts away. I have to start taking away some of the medicines. That's a good place to be.
What about diet? Every week there's a new article or study or something about what we should eat and what we should never eat. Are there basic guidelines that continue to hold true?
There are. I mean, this is not rocket science. I mean, everybody knows things that are bad for you are bad for you. Fried foods, foods that have a lot of cholesterol in them, and that's animal products. It's beef, it's chicken, it's, you know, milk and eggs. They all have cholesterol in them. So eating a good diet is important. You know, eating more lean meats, eating vegetables, staying away from fatty foods and fried foods. But, you know, as far as specifics, a lot of it has to do with total calorie intake, too. I mean, people say, well, I don't eat things that are bad for me. How come I'm overweight? How come I have diabetes? And part of it is just total calories that they take in during a day.
But I'm a big one of the simple way to think about it is put your 5 full helpings of fruits and vegetables in your diet every day, and potatoes and rice doesn't count.
Right.
And so if you really try to do that, that changes your diet. Not that you're necessarily vegetarian, but you just really try to put those in. You almost have to add salads. You need to have fruit for breakfast. And if you keep your meat lean, that's a really good start, and it changes your diet. It's more like what you need to be going towards.
And it is possible to eat a diet with no animal cholesterol and still have cholesterol in the body.
Absolutely.
Right. That's the other thing people think of. Well, I'm doing my part. I'm watching my diet. I'm being very, very rigorous about my diet. The reality is that even if you are on a very, very strict diet, you can usually only reduce your cholesterol by about 20%. So most of the cholesterol that we have in our bodies, we make ourselves. And likewise, if you really are in a situation where you have coronary disease and want to be aggressive as far as treating, most of the time, you have to do that with medications. People don't like taking medications. They think that it's somewhat of a failure. But the reality is the medicines are very, very good at reducing cholesterol and much better than doing it on diet alone. Diet helps, but sometimes can't be the whole thing.
1-800-933-5372 is our number if you have a question. We'll return to our conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Schussler and Dr. Kara East in just a moment. We also would ask that you call our other phone number right now, 1-800-456-5372, to support KERA, become a member for the first time or for the 20th time, or make an additional gift, and you will be helping the station that you listen to on a regular basis. You will also be signed up for the drawing that we have going so that you might be able to win a trip to London, round trip for two, along with a gift certificate for Marriott Hotels, and you will get a tour of the BBC if you happen to win that drawing. So it's been a good motivator for a lot of you. We want to thank those of you who have been calling today. Thanks to Sean McIver in McKinney, Cheryl Hazler in Plano, Christine Hammond in Carrollton, who gave an additional gift. Thanks so much, Christine. And thanks to all of you who are getting on the line or online right now. Jeff Whittington, senior producer of Think and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know, is here now. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And thanks so much to everyone who's called or pledged online. We are making some great progress on the membership campaign today. Of course, we would encourage you, if you're thinking about it, if you've considered it, if you joined last spring, your membership's up for renewal. Please do it today or first thing tomorrow. No, don't put it off. Do it right now.
Do it right now. You'll feel so good.
Yeah, if you do it right now, then the drive's over for you, and you'll help sort of maybe influence other people who are considering joining early. We really want to get everyone who supports the station, because we know that KERA is really important to you. And those of you who have contributed in the past, we know that you're going to continue to support the station. And, you know, we just want to get you sort of, for lack of a better term, sort of trained to respond early, because the sooner we get you on board and get you and you and you and you and everybody you know on board and everyone else who listens on board, the sooner we can wrap up the drive and get right back to the regular schedule.
Our number once again is 1-800-456-5372, or you can go online to kera.org. And hey, do us a favor. If you are a current member, you've given to the station all that you can for this drive or this year, put us on your Facebook page or on Twitter, or let people know that you're a member and that you encourage everybody else to join. It's funny what a big influence people have on each other. And your friends may not know that you're a member. They may, like you, listen to the station all the time and assume that you, like they, are not a member or wouldn't contribute. And you can have a really positive impact just by letting other people know that this is something that's important to you.
1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number. The web address, you know it, it's kera.org. Many of you maybe even listen online at kera.org during the day. So literally, we're just a click away from you getting to that support page and joining the station. We would love to see your contribution come across down in Pledge Control Central. And we'd love to sign you up for the drawing for the trip. We'd love to see you take advantage of some of the thank you gifts that we've offered already during the membership campaign, or make your whole gift go directly to programming. It's totally up to you. We know that you value KERA because you're listening. You're even listening during the pledge breaks. So we know that it's worth something to you. Either that or your radio's broken and stuck on 90.1.
Which wouldn't be such a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not such a bad thing. You know, we just come to you a couple of times a year, ask you to contribute some money to the station. So please do it right now. 800-456-5372.
You know, very often, several times a week, we have a guest who's written a book, and we hear from you often that you'll call us and say, well, I can't wait to run out and get this book. If you do that, say, five times a year, that's probably $150 right there. And we encourage you to purchase the books that our guests happen to have written. But think about the money that you're spending, and then think about making an additional sort of equal contribution to KERA for that amount, because we've brought this to your life. And maybe you didn't buy the book, but you sort of saved that money and got the information, then that's also worth, we think, a gift to KERA. We have raised almost $80,000 so far in our spring membership campaign. Once we reach our overall goal, we will stop, but we really need to hear from you so that you can help keep the station strong.
It is your public radio station, and there are stations all over the country, and those stations have their supporters, but this one's yours, and it's incumbent upon you to take a little extra step to make sure that the station that you value, the station that you use, the news information service that means enough to you that you spend your time with it, it's important that you support it financially at whatever level is comfortable for you. There are all kinds of different levels. You can surprise us or do the wow level, as Jeff Ramirez was saying earlier today. Just decide that it's worth your support and call 800-456-KERA or go online to kera.org.
Your contribution means something to us. So whether you can do the wow level, whether you can do $1,500 or $5,000, or you can do $50, it's a wow to us because we recognize that you have placed your money in trust with us and wanted to continue supporting the programming that you value. We make it as easy as possible once you make that call to 1-800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org. It can take as little as about 2 minutes to get everything set up. So we ask to hear from you now, and we will be back to our conversation in a moment. Thank you very much for your support.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking today about heart health in advance of the Women's Heart Health Fair, which takes place Saturday, April 25th at the Automobile Building in Fair Park from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. There is enough material there will be at this fair to screen the first 1,500 women who show up, so it might serve you well to get there early in the day to get your screenings. But there will be events going on throughout the day. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's go to Fela in Dallas. Hi, Fela.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thank you.
Listen, in 1990, I was diagnosed with MVP, mitral valve prolapse. The following year, my father died of a heart attack. Previous to this, we had no family history or knowledge of anybody having heart issues. In the years since 1990, I've had several of my female relatives on my maternal side be diagnosed with the same thing. My question is, at 36, I started smoking. I'm 41 now. how much, I mean, clearly I'm an issue. I should stop smoking, but how much should I be concerned with the MVP with my heart muscle and overall heart health?
Mitral valve prolapse is a disorder we used to diagnose more often, Fela, based on echo, and we've kind of changed our criteria for that. So mitral valve prolapse, there's just a couple of forms of it that are really dangerous, and actually they tend to do worse in men. So mitral valve prolapse is less of our concern here, but all of us are cringing as we say, you started 36 smoking. And so really, that's probably our greater concern is your family history. And it may be a good time. It may be a good investment to get one of these $80 CT scans, because if your calcium score is zero, then maybe, although you can still have a heart attack with a zero, but boy, if your calcium score is up there, then it's really time to change everything.
But we all agree that the smoking's got to go.
What do you recommend to patients who really want to quit smoking and have had just a really tough time doing that?
Well, it's tough. I mean, it really is a very addictive substance, one of the most addictive substances that we know of. And so, first of all, there's got to be a decision to stop. You know, it doesn't matter what medications or hypnosis or whatever. None of this works if you're not ready to quit. But if you're ready to make that step, we do have things that can help. And there's some medications that are out there that can actually kind of ease the process. It doesn't make you not want to smoke again. It doesn't make the cigarettes taste bad, but it definitely takes the edge off when you decide to put them down or wean yourself from the cigarettes. And I just want to mention, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't smoke, but I chew tobacco. Tobacco in any form is bad for your heart. It's not quite as bad for your lungs if you're not smoking it, if you're not inhaling it, but it's terrible for the cardiovascular system in any form. So there are things that are available, but, you know, I recommend going through and exhausting every option you have, whether that's hypnosis or acupuncture, you name it.
And, you know, I tell people, think about how your blood vessel system, all those little blood vessels in your body, there's 60,000 miles of blood vessels in your bodies, and all these risk factors we're talking about are talking about clogging up all these different blood vessels. We're increasingly noticing that the same risk factors that apply to the heart look like they're going to apply to Alzheimer's as well. Alzheimer's affects more women than men. And so really you do need to, you know, it's something preventable, something you can do something about.
An email from Paul in Farmers Branch says, a few months ago, use of stem cells to repair heart tissue was in the news. What was done, and is it known yet whether it was successful?
There have been a couple of trials looking at stem cells, and I just want to say that it's very, very early in the whole cycle of research. There's a thought that if you have damage to the heart muscle, and again, the heart generally does not do a good job repairing itself. If you've got dead tissue, it's going to remain unviable. If you can give precursor cells, and they've done this with bone marrow that they've injected into the bloodstream, you might see some improvement in the overall function. Again, these are very preliminary studies. They're not available around the country, and the results have been somewhat significant statistically, but it's not like there's been any clinical results where people are living longer or feeling much better. They're really in its infancy as far as the types of trials we're looking at.
Let's go next to Stephen in Denton. Hello, Stephen.
Hi. My question was about sucrose specifically. Like, what fruits can we eat that don't have so much or any in it? And how is sucrose specifically related to diabetes and cholesterol?
There's no really, we talk about these artificial sweeteners and some concerns that people have. There's not a whole lot of data on it, but the truth of the matter is we really cannot impugn any of these artificial sweeteners as having direct effects on blood vessels or even direct effects on any of the risk factors. So we've not shown any negatives about any of the artificial sweeteners that are out there. Some people, for stomach point of view, get a little diarrhea on sucrose, and really the sweeter the fruit, the juicier, the more likely it's going to be sucrose loaded. But that's really a stomach problem and really is not a vascular problem, not a heart vessel problem.
On the other hand, there's no real difference in terms of your body's health in the response to white cane sugar or honey or molasses or corn syrup. They're all sort of equally bad.
Yeah. You know, the body does a really good job of extracting what it needs from what it gets. And so the same thing goes for fluids. You know, people are always worried about getting enough fluid. Your body gets what it needs, or it tells you it needs more.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have an email here from Dave and Alan who says, how do you change cardiologists? If you're not happy, perhaps due to perceived lack of communication about results, how do you approach another cardiologist for a second opinion and perhaps the decision about changing doctors?
Well, I don't think it applies to cardiologists. I think it's doctors in general. If you don't feel like you're getting a good communication with your doctor, then it's time to have a new doctor. And if it's a specialist that you're not happy with, then a good place to go to and a good resource is go back to your general doctor and say, you know, I went to Dr. X, and wasn't really happy, do you have another doctor that you'd like to see? It's happened to all of us. I mean, not every pot has the same lid. And so if you're not happy with one doctor, then going to seek a second one is very reasonable. I don't think, you know, I was talking to another doctor the other day where I was the second opinion, and I called up the first guy and said, she just came for a second opinion. He's like, that's great. You know, any doctor worth their salt should not be afraid in the slightest of someone getting a second opinion. It's very, very reasonable. We do it when we go buy cars. We do it when we, you know, look at other things. And especially if it's your health, if you want another opinion, now that opinion may be the same as the first opinion. But if you'd like a second one, it's certainly very reasonable.
Do you owe it to Dr. A to let her know that you're thinking about changing?
No, I think it depends on your relationship with that doctor. If it was a bad relationship to begin with, I think that what you do is you figure out how you got to the first doctor in the first place. And, you know, if your referring physician's not willing to do it, then it may be time to just start over again.
And I think it's real important to have a good working relationship with your physician. And mm-hmm. I tell patients, it's not like our first visit that we really understand each other. It's about the second or third visit that I understand and they understand where I'm coming from. And that's when you can begin to really make a difference. And so you need a working relationship. It has to go both ways. You have to go in and ask questions, but you also have to listen.
But yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, that's all right.
There's a difference there between, you know, not liking the doctor because y'all don't get along and not liking the answer that they gave you. So
yeah.
Sometimes we hear bad news from our doctors, and unfortunately, you know, a doctor's job is to tell you the truth. It's not to try and candy coat it. It's to try and give you the best opinion that they have about what's going on with your health.
We have an email here, which I think is a joke, from Steve in Dallas, who said, please tell me I can eat bacon. But I wanted to take that and talk about, you know, there are so many foods out there that appear to be healthier substitutes for the original.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what we need to look for to make sure that we're really making a huge difference in the amount of healthful nutrients that we're getting.
Well, the question, you know, what's the problem with bacon in the first place? I mean, bacon, it's a meat, it has cholesterol, and it has a lot of fat. So the answer is yes, you can eat bacon, but you wouldn't eat something that was not healthy for you in large quantities. So everything in moderation. But if you wanted to choose other things, there are substitutes that are out there. And, you know, my wife's a vegetarian. We eat some soy products, and some of them are actually quite good. And so, you know, there's things that closely approximate sausage, for example, and, you know, they're lower in calories, they're lower in fat, they don't have cholesterol, and they taste pretty good. So rather than eating sausage, you can eat a sausage substitute or a bacon substitute. But you got to, there's a lot of choices out there.
But also, I just want to point out specifically, turkey bacon is made from the skin of the turkey, and it's not, it's low fat as you'd like it to be.
Right.
But a great substitute really is lean ham. The only downside of ham is being a little bit of salt. You know, it's saltier. But most people, what we call Canadian bacon is really ham. So there really are choices out there.
And I guess it also, you know, just because you're eating something better for you doesn't mean you should eat three times as much, which
right.
is the other temptation
Absolutely.
That we all have.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go next to Charles in Dallas. Hey, Charles.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I understand that taking oatmeal will eventually lower my cholesterol. How effective is that? And how often should I take oatmeal?
Oatmeal. Thank you so much.
I'll check my eyes
Was he asking about polycosinol? Was he asking about polycosinol?
No, oatmeal.
Oh, just oatmeal in general? Well, oatmeal is a little bit like any of our high-fiber diets in that it will absorb in the gut some of that fat, and you'll absorb less of it. But oatmeal, it's fine. Again, if you know, 5-6 points, it's the same thing, though, Jeff made. If you're really high, you know, if your total cholesterol is 280, you're not going to get there with diet, and we owe it to you. These medicines, these statins are very inexpensive now, very easy to take, 99% without side effects. We tell people, I said, you know, if penicillin tried to come to market today, it would never get here. 40% of people have reactions to penicillin. Are more current medications, our newer medications, are really fairly side effect free. Really, very few people have any reactions to them. So you'd be nuts not to do something with it. But oatmeal, it's fine. It's great. All kind of natural products that have some fiber in them are good for you.
But a lot of those foods, I mean, oatmeal, think about it. It's got no fat. It's high in fiber. And it has no cholesterol in it. A lot of the studies that look at some of these foods is saying it will lower your cholesterol. What they do is they take people who eat 5 strips of bacon, eggs for breakfast, and they say, well, instead of this regular breakfast, we're going to give you oatmeal. Of course, their cholesterol is going to come down. Rather than being any magical property of the food, it's just the fact that you're changing your diet to some degree. And that's
it's not
really
bacon
helps.
And eggs.
It's not bacon and eggs.
Right, and we didn't touch that in the diet a while ago. We talked about lean meat and the 5 fruits and vegetables. The other piece of it is, and an American Heart Association recommends this. I think this is a good idea. Save your carbs as something like desserts. So your carbs would be potatoes, like I said, potatoes, rice, pasta, cereals, and breads. And so eat your fruits and vegetables, eat your lean meat, and then those carbs you make just the last thing you'd eat. In other words, even like the last thing on your plate, or you make it just a small amount. But if you're going to add carbs, make them as high fiber as you can, because that's really more natural and probably doesn't absorb as much of that carb into your body.
Great advice from Dr. Kara East and Dr. Jeffrey Schussler. You can attend the Sister to Sister Women's Heart Fair this Saturday, April 25th, in the Automobile Building of Fair Park from 9 to 4. There are screenings available for up to 1,500 women, so the first 1,500 who arrive will receive those free of charge. You can find more information about that on the Think page of KERA.org. And Dr. East, last word?
So just last little bit thing about the fair. Remember, this is very women-oriented. We have massages, spa treatments, chocolate, Zumba, and ask the expert. You can ask a doctor any of your questions.
And Zumba is exercise, not a new kind of vacuum
cleaner. That's exactly right. And there are going to be raffles and giveaways. It's very much oriented towards the women in our culture.
Sounds like
Spanish language stage, one whole stage with physicians just for Spanish language speakers.
Great. Thank you all so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to thank all of you as well who have been calling today to support KERA with a contribution. 1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number to make it happen if you want to do it online, as so many of you we know do. Then you just go to KERA.org and click on the support button right there at the top of the page. I want to thank folks like Mr. and Mrs. Jerry McCutcheon Jr. This is their first membership contribution. Welcome. Thank you so much for that. Stephen Gore in Denton is renewing a membership. Myra Schussler in Fort Worth is a new member in honor of guest speaker Dr. Jeffrey Schussler, and we'll assume that perhaps they are related, and we're welcome to her, and it was wonderful to have Dr. Schussler on as well. Whatever motivates you to become a member, whether you have a relative featured on the show or you just really love the programming or a little bit of both, we really appreciate your contribution. We know you have a million things to spend your money on, a million choices to make in an average day, certainly in an average year. We believe here, personally, not just as members of this institution and employees of the institution, we believe that KERA is a worthwhile use of a bit of your money. We ask you to decide for yourself how much of that money you want to contribute, but you get to hear where it goes every single day of the year.
1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number, the online place to go, KERA.org. Please do your part right now, because you get something out of KERA. You've already chosen to listen to the station. Maybe you listen all the time. Maybe you're here in some other stations. You know, that's perfectly acceptable as well. But those other stations sort of quantify and qualify your listenership and sell large spans of advertising to people for quite probably, I mean, I can't really speak from direct experience here, but for quite a bit of dough. We come directly to you and say, hey, you listen, let's cut out the whole, you know, middle person thing and with the whole big giant blocks of advertising, and come directly to you and say, why not send us some money so that we can continue to bring you the content? I mean, the programming fees just for NPR programs, not including the Think Show, is $1 million a year for KERA. So you listen to the station, you use the service, we're asking you to directly support it and help fund over half the budget that KERA needs to continue to exist.
Your contribution right now also helps us shorten the overall length of this fundraising drive. You know, look, as Jeff sort of alluded to earlier, there's nothing wrong with the other model of raising the money you need to run a radio station. The couple reasons why we don't want to do that here are, one, it's not how public radio goes. We would rather, and we know that you would rather not listen to a great deal of advertising when you're on our air. It also frees us up to serve you directly with programming that may or may not please an advertiser in the traditional sense. And we think that that's valuable and absolutely worth paying for. The telephone number to become a member of the station is 1-800-456-5372.
Yeah, KERA only answers to you, the listeners. The station does not answer to advertisers. The station answers to you, because you're the person that ultimately we have to entice, convince, and get
needle and cajole
and get involved as a listening member, a supporting listener. And you can do it at $35. You can do it at $350 a year. You decide what's right for you. You can use a credit card or a debit card. Those are great because it goes straight into the KERA operating account, and we don't have to send you a bunch of follow-up paperwork. It cuts down on postage, et cetera. It's easier for you because you know it's done. You can become a sustaining member and set it up so it's an affordable monthly transfer from your account to KERA's membership account. A lot of people choose that because it's, you know, it can be less than an ATM fee. less than one ATM fee a month if you so choose. You get to decide. Just call 800-456-5372 or check out all the options when you go to the support page at KERA.org.
This is your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas-Fort Worth Denton, and online at KERA.org. Again, our number, we'll give it to you one more time, is 1-800-456-5372. You can go to the support page of KERA.org, make your contribution there. Takes very little time. You can sign up as a sustaining member, which makes it really convenient, and you sort of don't need to make another call again if you don't want to.
Yeah, it's very easy. It's all set up all at this time of year. Of course, you know, the support page is always working. The phone number really works year-round for people to call and support the station.
The worst-kept secret ever. You can always – we'll always take your contribution.
But we gear up, you know, around these membership campaigns to come to you in sort of a concentrated way and really get the money raised as quickly as possible. And our promise to you that the membership fundraising drive will end as soon as we reach the goal is still stands. That's the way we do things now. So that's why it's so important that you join up right now. 800-456-5372.
Let's face it, that's also our promise to ourselves.
Well, sure.
That as soon as we raise the money, we'll be back full time to doing what we love the most, which is making radio that we hope serves you. Again, you can call us right now at 1-800-456-5372 or go online and make a secure donation at KERA.org. Thanks so much to all of you who have called today.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.